practical web accessibility tips. Hello and welcome to WebAx, episode 27. This is your host Dennis with Check Engine USA, and today I have a special episode. We have an interview with Jared Smith from WebAIM. And also along with us today is Ross Johnson from 3.7 Design.
Glad to be back.
And hello.
Hey, Ross. Hey, Jared.
Hi.
So, Jared, thank you very much for agreeing to be with us today.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm happy to be on with you.
Great. And likewise, you know, I really appreciate the work you guys have been doing, and I've been following the WebAIM site for, I guess, several years now, you know, and it's really impressed me, and I've really learned a lot from you guys. So, you know, it's really my honor to have you here in this conversation. Well, let's get to it. We got a list of questions that we wanted to go over, and maybe we'll get into a few other things. But Jared, why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about your background and how you first got into, you know, web design or coding and accessibility.
Well, my background is actually in education, secondary education, business education, actually, to be specific. So kind of in my course of getting my education degree and a little stint in the classroom, I had a little teaching gig at a technical college here in the Valley. Located here in northern Utah, Logan, Utah. We're based at Utah State University. So I got this teaching job, and they asked me to teach web design. And this was in 1998, so it was fairly early in the game, and I was a terrible teacher of HTML. I look back at the things that I taught back then, and, oh, it was sloppy code, and it was messy and ugly. But that's really what first got me involved in kind of this web coding thing. Of course, back then, I really knew nothing of standards, of accessibility, of any of that, but I learned a lot about web design, web coding, and the way the web works generally. You know, we were using TextPad and HomeSite and Netscape Composer in that class, and so that kind of gives you an idea of the type of garbage that we were creating.
Right.
But it was fun. It was educational, and I ended up going back to school and pursued a master's degree in instructional technology here at Utah State University, and it was during my master's program that I got connected with the folks here at WebAIM, and I'd always been a proponent of education and teaching and teaching with technology, and as I became involved with WebAIM, I really, you know, discovered a lot of the problems that are out there with technology and people with disabilities, and so I joined the WebAIM team in 2000, and I've been here ever since.
Great. Can you, you actually kind of led right into one of my questions, and can you just kind of give a brief explanation of how WebAIM, Utah State, and the Center for Persons with Disabilities are kind of affiliated with each other?
Yeah, maybe I'll back up just a little bit and give a little bit of background of WebAIM and how it started. It was actually began in 1999. We received some grant funding to do a lot of information dissemination and awareness type things on web accessibility. And in 1999, that was pretty early in the game. There weren't many people that were really addressing web accessibility. So that's how we started. And we've been through several cycles of federal grant funding. We have our products and services, but really we're a nonprofit organization that's based here at the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State. The Center for Persons with Disabilities is a university-affiliated project. There are about 250 employees here at the center, and it's a kind of a regional, in a way, a national center. We just happen to live here at Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of a background about the whole thing, but
okay.
We have really close ties here with the center and the center's influence, kind of more nationally on the broader issue of disability.
All right, and you are Associate Director at WebAIM, is that correct?
Yeah, that's what they call me. it's one of those title things. I kind of do about everything. You know, we have a small team here. It's not a large organization, but we've got a great team here, and I do a little bit of everything. And for the most part, I maintain the website. I write a lot of the web resources that we have, help maintain the community that we've built, as well as doing product development for some of our accessibility tools and a lot of our service type stuff, evaluations and monitoring and reporting, training, those types of things. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and let's see, what do you think some of the accomplishments of WebAIM are?
Well, I think we started things really early in the game in 1999, so we've been around for a while, and I think that gave us a great opportunity to influence a lot of people. I hope at least that we've been a useful resource for developers over the years. We have a lot of information available on our website. We've held a long series of web-based trainings that we've had, and I think that's one thing, is that we're established as a reputable resource out there, and I think that's our greatest accomplishment. Mm-hmm. In that people can respect us and look up to and use a lot of the resources that we have. We've built a pretty strong community. We have web-based forums. We have an email list that has about 1,200 people subscribed to it. And in fact, I did the math today. As near as I can tell, about 5 million individual emails have been sent out on our email list.
Wow.
So that's a big one. But we've done a lot of tool development, things that we've given back to the community. The Wave tool is one thing that we've...
Oh, right, the toolbar?
Uh-huh. Well, it's a toolbar and the standalone web page evaluator. So
right, yeah, I've used that.
Yeah, great tool for people to come in and evaluate how they're doing as far as accessibility goes, and hopefully in a relatively easy-to-use manner. And that's something we're kind of excited about right now. We're doing some continued development and improvement of that tool. And so the near future will show some neat things that we're doing as far as Wave development. But, you know, I think for the most part, we're just proud that people look up to us as a resource. We're kind of proud of the fact if you do a Google search, and not the Google results mean a whole lot, but if you do a Google search for just about anything and the word accessibility, we tend to be right up there towards the top of the results.
Right.
And so hopefully that means people are linking to us and look at us as being somewhat of an authority, and we have information and content that's useful for people interested in accessibility.
I know I've looked to you guys. I've been doing it from, I think, early in 2001, you know, and you along with the W3C have been my go-tos for the most part. So, the Wave tool is really good, and I've used that. And that kind of brings me to the next question, is what are some of the goals of WebAIM? You mentioned already kind of enhancing that Wave tool, or?
Yeah, our plans right now are really to continue and push our services and products base that we already have. So, we do full-scale accessibility consulting and evaluation, monitoring and reporting over time. We do training, in-person training or at a distance training and consulting. So we're focusing on that as well as our products, including the Wave evaluation tool. We also have a new exciting tool called CaptionCaster, and CaptionCaster is a real-time captioning system. We've found over the years that's one of the problems that people have come to us with is, oh, I'm doing this real-time media stuff on the web, and how can I provide captions for that?
Mm-hmm.
There really hasn't been a very good answer to that. So we are in development of a tool that will hopefully make that a lot easier for people to provide those real-time captions.
Wow, yeah, that sounds neat.
For the most part, we want to stay a relevant resource to continue to build the community that we have and stay in business. Yeah, we're always seeking continual funding in the form of grants and so forth, but right now we are operating for the most part off of our products and services, and want to make that so it continues to be viable for our employment.
Excellent. So, Jer, what do you think of the new the WCAG 2.0 guidelines?
Well, you know, I think they're awesome. I think there's just been so much work and so much thought put into those guidelines. They have received a fairly critical look, and I think that's good lately. There's been a lot of critiques and criticism of the guidelines, and I think that's a good thing. It's important. I think that those in the accessibility community are looking at those very closely. But I think for the pro, they're in depth, they're specific, but it's but they're kind of a beast also, and it's just the nature of the beast. I see a real dilemma in the development and implementation of any set of accessibility guidelines. When you look at the web content accessibility guidelines, they really focused on specificity. They wanted it to be very specific to accessibility, so it was very, very thorough and addressed pretty much everything you could think of as far as accessibility goes, with the exception of maybe some cognitive disability issues. And they wanted it to be technology agnostic, so they didn't want it to be just web pages. They wanted it to apply to technologies as they would change over time. If we look at version one of the guidelines, they're very web page, HTML specific, and now the web is so much more than HTML. And so they want those guidelines to apply that way. So what happens in that process of having things be very specific and technology agnostic is you end up with terminology and language that is often outside of the grasp of the everyday web developer. So you get terms like authored component and web unit and parsed unambiguously and programmatically determined, and the list goes on. And it's hard to do that. So there's a real fine balancing act in having that specificity plus the understandability. And there's no way they could really do that and make everybody happy. But I'm pretty happy with the results that they have. But what it will take over time is us looking at those guidelines and interpreting them and finding ways that we can take that language that's kind of hard and transferring it to everyday web developers, kind of the WCAG 2 for Dummies or whatever it might be, so we can take those things and make them actually applicable and understandable to everybody else.
What do you think about Joe Clark's response and kind of his plan to start his own accessibility movement?
Well, I think most of his the references to his A List Apart article that was very critical of the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0. I think for the most part he was right. You know, most of his criticisms were really on target. A lot of it had to do just with the fact that it is out of grasp of everyday developers. If I were to you know, pull a web developer off the street and give him WCAG 2, you know, oh boy, that's going to be a nightmare. You know, let alone trying to get that developer to understand it, let alone apply it. So those criticisms were right on, I think, and the working group, I think, is addressing a lot of those things and clarifying some of the questions that were brought up there. But a lot of his opinions or interpretation of some of the specific guidelines, I think, were off. So there were things that he interpreted differently, I think, than the working group intended them to be. But that alone tells you something. That if Joe Clark could read these and not understand it or understand it incorrectly, then there may be some issues in wording or the way that it was worded. I do have to say that his criticism comes very early. There's still work going on, but for the most part, we need more people like Joe Clark. We need more people in the community to get involved and start looking at those guidelines and providing feedback and recommendations for change. I just hope that that the W3C is not so far along in the process or too so set that it's too late for that type of criticism or comments to be of any effect to them.
Yeah, I wouldn't want them to be too separated from the, you know, web development community and, right, and lose that. Ross, were you going to say something?
Yeah, actually, I was wondering if you thought the complexity of the WCAG 2 guidelines might create a bigger demand for accessibility experts?
You know, I I don't know. Possibly. I think a lot of it will determine or will be determined by how much version 2 of those guidelines are actually accepted by the community as a whole. Of course, a lot of that will be determined by whether legislation begins to say that that those guidelines are part of legislation. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that will be the case. But yeah, I think there's always a need for more people to understand accessibility. I don't know if they necessarily have to be these experts that are going to do all of the work. I would really hope that the requirements of WCAG 2 are not such that only experts can implement them. I hope that accessibility never gets to the level to where only an elite few can understand it to a level that they can do it. We're kind of at that point right now, but I hope that over time that changes to where accessibility becomes something that everybody can do. The guidelines are going to be just one small component of making that a reality. As far as the other part of your first question about Joe Clark's WCAG Samurai, his group that's going to be looking at, I guess, developing their own little set of standards or updating of the 1.0 version of the guidelines, I think it's a great thing. I think it's something that the group has needed to do for some time, to look at those original guidelines, update them, add clarification where they're needed, and make them a little more useful for today's technologies. So I say good on Joe. Good. I think it'll be a great thing.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see those. You touched on a couple things that I had written down that I wanted to talk about. One of them was just awareness, and that, as we all know, the vast majority of websites out there aren't very accessible, and I found accessibility awareness really to be one of the hurdles when working with different clients and even many of the web developers that I've worked with. How do you address that problem, and how can we help spread the word?
Well, WebAIM, that's something that we've been doing for 7 years now. Our primary goal has always really been awareness, spreading the word about accessibility, that evangelism of getting people on board, and mostly making them generally aware that there are issues. A lot of people, and even a lot of developers and even expert developers, aren't fully aware of even the issues that are out there regarding accessibility right now. So, yeah, I just echo what you've said. Yeah, there's a lot to do. We still see that as the primary issue. I think that some of the solutions for that aren't things really that we can do individually, but we really need a culture of web accessibility, a paradigm shift where accessibility really becomes the way things are done. So it's no longer building a website, and we ought to do accessibility, but that accessibility is part of building the site. It's part of the design. It's part of content creation.
Well, thanks to web standards. I think web standards is a big help for that.
Exactly. Right. And that's really where I've started to see a big change in that. It used to be we had, these, I don't know exactly the best way to characterize this, but we kind of had these technical standards, and then we had accessibility as kind of an add-on patch that we do in a way separately. But anymore, the conversation is web standards, and accessibility is a core central part of that, and that's great. We also need better tools. The tools that we're using to develop and build websites, especially for the person just getting into web development, don't support web accessibility well enough. They've come a long ways, but mm-hmm. there's more that they can do. And just the types of things that we're doing, spreading the word, that evangelism,
right,
getting other developers on board and making them aware of the issues is the best thing that we can do.
I saw you mentioned legislation. Obviously, that's another thing that would get people going on accessibility. But I saw on the WebAIM website you've updated the Section 508 checklist. And I was just wondering if you wanted to say a couple words about what you've done there and any other updates on 508.
Yeah, well, most of the changes that we made there, the Section 508 guidelines, the 16 points that apply specifically to web access, they haven't changed since 98, I think, when they were first drafted, and 2001 when they were implemented. Really, what we did is just made some minor wording changes and clarification changes. Our checklist was originally written, I believe, in 2001, and so we just went through and made a few updates to make them a little more relevant to some technologies and accessibility techniques today. But we are excited that the Section 508 is in the beginning processes of being updated. And so at WebAIM, my role also was in another program here at the Center for Persons with Disabilities. I'll be on the technical advisory committee that will be making the recommendations for changes to Section 508.
Oh, that's great.
And, as well as the Telecommunications Act. And so we have our first committee meeting later this month where we're going to be looking at where is 508 right now, where does it fall short as far as electronic and information technology access, and what needs to be changed. And over the course of a year or 2 years, who knows how long, we're going to be making those recommendations for change. And I don't know what that's going to mean, whether it's going to involve a lot of the web content accessibility guidelines, whether it's going to be something different. But what is exciting is that there are going to be changes, there are going to be updates. And so we know that Section 508 has had a big impact on awareness of accessibility and implementation of accessibility, and by updating those guidelines, we feel like we're going to have a great opportunity or potential to impact millions of users out there as far as accessibility goes.
Yeah, and that's how I got into accessibility originally, is in 2001, actually, when Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act was enacted, that I was doing a lot of web-based training. I was, like yourself, I was involved in e-learning and stuff, and the company I was working for had a lot of federal, government and military type contracts. So I soon became the 508 expert.
Yeah, Section 508 does have a very broad reach, at least here in the United States, as far as those guidelines go, and we're just thrilled to have a seat at the table with IBM and Microsoft and Dell and Apple.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And there's 20 or 30 groups that are at the table, and we're just happy to represent for the most part education interests in the way that those new guidelines are going to be formed.
And we've mentioned legislation a few times. Can you give us an update on the lawsuit with Target?
Well, it continues. It goes on. Despite some of the headlines from this last week, there was a little announcement that I think was misinterpreted by many people in the press and even in the accessibility field that it's a great thing. There was an interpretation this week that
Can I interrupt for a second? If people out there aren't familiar with what's going on, was it in February when this started? The National Federation of the Blind sued Target because their website is inaccessible.
That's correct. Yeah, thanks for the background. Yeah, so it's the lawsuit by the National Federation for the Blind. It's a class action lawsuit against Target, claiming discrimination under civil rights laws, primarily the Americans with Disabilities Act, basically claiming that Target discriminated against blind users in their ability to access their products and services through their website. So really what happened this last week is the judge said, the case can continue on. It's not over yet. The National Federation for the Blind hasn't won the case, as some people proclaimed. But the judge just said that it appears that the Americans with Disabilities Act can apply to websites. And that's an important thing. That's a clarification that people have been looking for some time as to whether the ADA actually does apply to websites. And in this case, the judge said, it appears that it does. So that's useful for many people in the field. As far as the lawsuit goes itself, it continues. I don't know how far it'll get. I think many in the field are really looking for case law that will define better whether those civil rights laws do apply to websites.
Mm-hmm.
Of most interest will be whether the judge actually defines what accessibility is or what online discrimination is. That would be of the most use to us, but where it actually ends up, who knows?
Yeah, well, I think we're all looking forward to see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Refresh. As I mentioned to you before, Ross and I started a refresh-detroit.org website, part of the refreshingcities.org movement, and I guess as you explained, the Refresh Orlando is putting on that conference in November, and I understand you'll be speaking there.
I will be. I'm excited. I went to At Media, which is a standards conference in England this last year, and when I came home from that, I just had this overwhelming impression and thought that, boy, we need more of that here in the States. We need groups of developers that can get together and just talk about standards. And shortly after that, this conference was announced. And the Refresh groups are doing that. I think that's great that they're getting these local groups of developers together to talk about standards. And this conference is going to be an opportunity for people to get together for 2.5 days and learn about standards, learn about accessibility and application. Should be a great thing. I'm excited to be able to go there and speak for a little bit about user experiences on the web and standards, as well as some of the changes that are happening with the new W3C guidelines in Section 508. So check it out. Refresh06.com is the website address.
Okay. You know, and I noticed, I think on the refreshingcities.org site, the tagline mentioned usability and standards, but I didn't see accessibility in there.
I'm not sure. Well, I
better email them and tell them to add accessibility.
if we're talking about standards and usability, I would hope that accessibility is part of that.
Maybe they just assumed that was included, but
yeah,
you know,
I hope so.
When we joined, they asked for feedback. It was really cool, and that's something I still, Ross. Maybe you and I can get together and think of some feedback to give them, but they were open to, totally open to feedback for their website, so maybe that's one of the things we'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, Dennis, you often mention on your podcast that kind of usability and standards and accessibility are all kind of intertwined. I mean, a site that's...
USA.
Tagline. A site that's usable, or a site... It's got to be acceptable. I mean, otherwise it's not a really, or accessible, not acceptable. Otherwise it's not really a usable site. And maybe that's what they're kind of going for, or maybe not.
Maybe they don't want to scare people away. But, all right, let's see. Well, I think I'm down to the last question. I know we're running a little over on time, but somewhat recently you guys relaunched the WebAIM website, and I don't know if you recall, Jared, I did leave you a couple comments on your blog that you addressed, which was really cool. But I was wondering if you had anything come out of that, any stories or anything about the relaunch that you wanted to share?
Well, we learned a lot. We learned a lot in applying such a very high-level accessibility to really what's a fairly complex site with a lot of content, with a lot of interactive type of elements. There was a lot going on with our site, yet we had to hold ourselves to a very high level of accessibility. So it was quite a process going through that. We really learned a lot about accessibility and how it works. One thing we learned is that you can't please everybody, and I think accessibility often is that. It's put it this way, for a lot of things in accessibility, there isn't a right way. There are a lot of good ways, And so you have to choose the best good way that you can come up with, and sometimes that's not the same choice that somebody else would have made. And you know, that's all right. And we had a lot of conversations in our design process and our review process and after the launch about some of the decisions that we made, and we documented those and put those on the site, letting people know why it is that we made the decisions that we made. We got some criticism for some of them, and that's fine, and we really enjoyed the commentary and everything that followed that, because it was really useful for us to see. But one thing it did teach me, and this is something I'll be blogging about, I'll probably have it on the blog tomorrow, is this interesting dynamic between visual design and accessibility, and how these two things in many ways tend to conflict with each other, and how we go through a process of resolving that. And I think that we've seen a lot of that very recently in the standards field, where we've seen a lot of people on the accessibility side of things and a lot of people on the visual design side of things kind of butt heads, and there's been a lot of conflict lately about those two fields and how they don't work together, and I think there's a lot of ways that we can work better together. So I've got a big blog entry that I'll put up probably later today or tomorrow on that. But that's one thing that I really learned, is how to address some of these big issues of visual design and accessibility and putting it all together in one big site. And it's not easy. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of user testing. Ultimately, you just have to make a decision and go with it.
Well, I found that you know, learning more CSS and using that to your advantage, and the DOM, you know, JavaScript and everything, is a big help, and it might be able to, you know, cushion some of that.
Yeah, you know, and it is. Accessibility is a complex thing. It really is. It's a big complex thing. It takes a lot of understanding, and it's not something you can learn through a checklist. It's not something you can learn by studying all 600 pages of the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0 and the supporting document. You can't learn accessibility that way. It really takes time and interacting with users, and that's really what we're talking about here, is that end user and seeing how they're using your site and getting that feedback. It's a really large dynamic thing. Good thing there's just a lot of resources and tools and guidelines and people like you that can help people out in that process.
Well said.
And I think that as technology improves, it'll actually be a lot easier to kind of make that balance. I mean, like Dennis was just saying, with CSS and DOM, you know, you can do a lot of presentation things that really doesn't interfere with accessibility so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited for that, but the part that kind of scares me about that is the fact that many of the assistive technologies, the screen readers, the screen enlargers, are a step or two behind, and they always have been, but they're a step or two behind those newest developments on the Ajax Web 2.0 front, and so...
Yeah, the Ajax could be a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that, you know, that technology is moving so fast. And I think it's great that people are addressing accessibility. They're looking at it and looking very closely at it. And that's awesome. That's something we didn't have a few years ago with these new and emerging technologies. But still, there's always going to be this dilemma that those screen readers are always going to be a step or two behind.
Yeah.
Well, hey. At least until we can, I don't know, maybe pursue open source type solutions to a lot of those issues.
Right. Okay, Jared. Well, we're going to end the interview there. But again, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. I think the conversation went really well. I really enjoyed it. And Ross, thank you for joining in and assisting with the technical aspect. So. There you have it. Jared Smith, Associate Director from WebAIM out of Utah. Northern Utah, right?
That's right. Thank you, Dennis and Ross. It's been great to be with you.
You can find the WebAX blog and podcast at webax.blogspot.com. webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAX at webax@gmail.com, or simply leave a comment on one of the blog or podcast entries. WebEx is brought to you by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. CheckEngineUSA.com.